And I see a ton of mistakes. For example, people sending an offer. That's why the offer is step six. You are not allowed to send an offer in my method at any stage. You don't send an offer. You walk them through the offer. So you schedule a meeting, and during the meeting, you walk them through it. But you are not allowed to send an offer. As soon as you send an offer, you lose the deal. You lose the win rate.
Hello and welcome to Mind Your Effing Business, a podcast for the ever curious and insatiable learners. If you're anything like me, with an unquenchable thirst for knowledge and zero tolerance for nonsense, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Dominic Monkhouse, and this is my personal invitation for you to join me on my own journey of discovery. Together, we'll learn from innovators, strategists, investors, entrepreneurs, and business experts that have already left a dent in the world and those that are exploring new and smarter ways of doing it. Whether it's groundbreaking innovations, transformative business strategies, or the sheer force of will to disrupt industries, each episode is a masterclass from the trailblazers who've walked the path of significant achievement. Join me every Tuesday on YouTube or wherever you hear your podcasts and dive deep into the minds that refuse to accept the status quo. Hello, today I'm talking with and learning from Simon Severino. He has written a fabulous book called Strategy Sprints. He's also have a website of the same name, Strategy Sprints. And that's what we're going to talk about, sales. In his mind, that's what he does. He takes clients and he helps small business owners double the revenue in 90 days. He has a sales acceleration formula. He spent his early career working as a consultant. We talk a little bit about that. And then we also pick up a couple of meetings. He says, look, you can transform an organization from not having a sales culture to having a sales culture just by implementing two meetings a week. Listen to that. That is absolutely fantastic. He said, look, that's the $1 million change in many businesses. And I think he's probably right. I'm sure you'll enjoy our conversation.
Hello, everyone. Simon Severino. I'm the CEO of Strategy Sprints. I help people accelerate sales.
Why did you end up picking this as a living, a career, a calling?
So in the 90s, you might remember actually, and many listeners might remember, that the big strategy houses, the big strategy advisories, were looking for people from independent of what their background was. They were just picking the best people, independent of if you had studied economy or anything else. That was my chance to enter the world of the global strategy advisories. So I had studied philosophy and psychology, but I had the best grades. And so I was in. I was like, pinch me. Is this real? Do I have a real job now? And they were like, hey, it's wonderful that you're here because you can solve problems in a structured way. And I was, all right, I take it. And so I really enjoyed it. It was an El Dorado of learning. You can imagine, week one, I was in the top boards of the top companies worldwide. I was flying from Paris to Beijing to New York to solve big go-to-market problems with really, really smart teams. I loved it. I had hundreds of colleagues that I could ask for. And so I really learned every week a ton of things. For 4 years in a row, I had no weekend. I was just flying to the next problem to solve, and I loved it. So this is how I got to the job. I just needed a job after having studied philosophy and psychology. That was my entry point. And I got lucky. I got lucky by having immediately a real job, a really good job where I was learning a lot. After 4 years, I realized this is my thing. And inside of that, we had different mandates, different questions from our clients. One was, hey, can you organize us in a better way? And another one was, how can I beat my competitor? I felt strongly compelled to the one, how can I beat my competitor? Because I'm a competitive person, and so I loved it. But also, the clients, they were happy to give any resource, any budget for something that helps them win in the market and stay in the market. So it was the most relevant thing for them. If I would say to the CEO of a big pharma company, Bob, I need 5 more days with your top 50 people. Can we stay longer here in Grand Hyatt? He would say, no problem, Simon. We have to get this right, because if we don't have a market strategy, I have nothing to do for these guys when they fly back to their countries. So yes, you have 5 more days with my top 50 people. That's why I did fall in love with it, because it was the highest energy, highest attention, highest resources topic that my clients wanted to get solved. I did fall in love with that. 21 years later, I'm still doing that.
So you said there were 2 things you could do. You could either have worked out how to organize it, or you could work out how to go to market. And your brain isn't wired to do the organizing. Your brain is wired to do the go to market.
I'm a terrible manager. I'm a terrible people's person. 0 patience.
There should be a 12-step program for us. Hello, my name's Dominic, and I can't manage for shit.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And so I didn't even try to get, you know, the culture acceleration program or whatever program, change management. Don't get me even started. After 2 hours, I would like to exit just the venue. I didn't even try to go for org and reorg projects. I said, hey guys, I'm the markets guy. If you need help with markets, I'm your guy.
Fab. And so how did that transition into this? Because now you're not working with Fortune 1000. You're now working with the Fortune 500,000.
Yes.
Or whatever it is, mid-market companies that are struggling.
I went to the solopreneurs even. So we're coaching right now solopreneurs, teams of 5, of 10, of 50, only a few teams of 500 people, but really the smallest entity in the entrepreneurial world that you can imagine. For those people, we have now group programs and one-on-one programs. And really my heart is with the solopreneurs, because they need it the most right now.
You claim some quite extraordinary success with these guys. Do you guarantee to impact their revenue in 12 weeks?
Most of them double their revenue. I can guarantee the parts that are in my control. They have to guarantee the parts that are in their control. But yes, we write down the parts that are expected from each person on the sprint team. So it's sprint team, sprint coach, plus on their side. If it's a solopreneur, it's just a solopreneur, and soon enough, we'll help them onboard some freelancers that will become their assistants.
When did you do this transition from sort of big consulting to helping humanity?
Helping solopreneurs, I did that transition as soon as I became a solopreneur, because then I felt humbled by the experience. Because when you're just an advisor, you say, hey guys, do this. And then you fly back 1 month later and you wonder, why didn't they do it? It's easy. I gave them the template, right? Why didn't they do it? So when you're on the other side, you get humbled by the experience. You go, oh, now I know why they didn't do it. Because they have 170 other things to do.
This was a number 171 of the things they didn't get to do, not the
exactly.
Only thing they didn't get to do.
And even if you want to do it, right? But then you have your kids coming in, or it's a pandemic happening. There is stuff happening all the time. I got humbled by that and I went, whoa, the things that I have learned with the Googles and BMWs, the solopreneurs need exactly those things. Checklists, templates, my beloved spreadsheets and Google Docs. I said, guys, you have to use this. I have solved this already 60 times. Here is the spreadsheet. Please make it your own. Change the content, change the structure, eliminate some things, but have a structure. Start with something. And I realized they all don't have it. They don't have sales processes. They don't have SOPs. They don't have even a sales script. And so I went, guys, use mine.
And they don't know what problem they're hoping to solve for anybody. And they don't know how to price it. They don't know who their core customer is.
Yes. And their default is, okay, you'll get a discount. And that's a horrible thing to do, because it will destroy their positioning and their confidence.
Yes. And even then, people still don't buy. even if you give it away for nothing, people still won't buy.
It gets worse and worse because now you are winning the race to the bottom. Now you have validated that they shouldn't buy from you.
This is all in your book, Strategy Sprints?
Yes. So chapter one is the marketing chapter, how to set up a marketing process that starts from, okay, who is this for? What is it for? And then gets precise. And the chapter two is the sales chapter. And the later chapters are then client delivery checklists and hiring checklists.
And so you said you're helping these solo entrepreneurs hire assistants. What are the assistants doing generally for people?
Typically, so let's say a solopreneur, like we had recently a solopreneur, he is the sales trainer to the NASDAQ and to the big brands. But when he goes on holidays, nothing happens because he is the whole business. So he says, Simon, can you help me make my business less dependent on me? You seem to have a process. Maybe you can help. So we started. All right. First step, you hire an assistant. And he goes, okay, where do I find an assistant? LinkedIn jobs. So we helped him post it on LinkedIn. He had an assistant. And the first thing, she was basically the coordinator for everything admin, right? From scheduling to everything that's administrative. From there, he got enough confidence and also the proof that giving something away actually works. The quality is still high and his life got better. So from there, we said, okay, now let's write down how you do marketing, how you do sales, how you do client delivery. We call it ops operation. So we wrote these three things down and then we hired one freelancer for each part. So he now had a head of marketing, a head of sales, and a head of client work. That was four hires because our cycle is 90 days. And so in 90 days, we can do these four things, basically. After 90 days, I said, how is it going now? And he said, my life is completely different now. I can pick and choose the tasks that I do. There are three that I love. Everything else I hate. And so they are taking it from me. I am in my zone of genius. I'm doing the three things that I love. It's speaking on stage. It's closing big deals. Only the closing call, not the setting call. You know, not appointment setting. It's just waking up in the morning, his calendar is full, and he says, hello, how can I help? And closes the deal. Those are the things that he enjoys doing, plus being on podcasts, plus being on stages. And the rest is taken care of. So this is what we typically do in 90 days. Help them map out what they're doing. And if they don't have a team, help them build a team.
So you've talked about, you know, you mentioned Google and BMW, you know, these Fortune 1000 businesses up here. And then you've got this solo entrepreneur. If it's a bigger team, if it's a bigger company, I have reasonable sized clients that I work with, particularly where it's a tech business and it's a tech founder. And so they have this sense that they really don't like sales at all or salespeople. And if salespeople, you know, if only they'd met a salesperson who was talented in any way other than they could just speak and they were greedy, they haven't met one. And so they've often tried and failed to hire sales and sales teams and salespeople and sales directors multiple times. It's like, if I went to hire a developer, I mean, I might meet you and go, I like you, but I couldn't possibly work out whether you could code or not. They seem, in the same way, unable to hire salespeople who can actually sell. So if in that sort of larger business, what are some of the building blocks, you know, that you would say, okay, here's a business that, I don't know, maybe they're doing 10 or 15 million pounds a year. That most of that comes from recurring revenue and it's taken a long time to get here. And now they go, Simon, I really want to, you know, accelerate this business. What would 90 days look like for them, do you think?
I will give you my million-dollar blueprint here.
Oh, fantastic.
This mandate, we start by installing two sales meetings per week. Typically, they have a monthly meeting that sucks. It's not well run because they are not good at running meetings or moderating anything. They are tech guys. They're great at product. And so their meetings are terrible. So first thing, we install two weekly meetings. And the standard is Monday or Tuesday, it's the pipeline meeting, 60 minutes, all hands. And then on Thursday or Friday, the deal review meeting, 1 hour, select people, the deal makers. Now, what happens with the pipeline meeting is it creates a culture of opportunity creation. It means it makes everybody sales aware.
Let me interrupt the conversation for a minute because you don't want to miss this. My new book, Mind Your Effing Business, is out on Amazon. If you're thinking, yet another business book, you're wrong. This is the blueprint to cutting through the noise and achieving unparalleled success. Whether it's supercharging sales, mastering talent acquisition, building a powerhouse brand, or cultivating a company culture that breeds success, this book is your ticket to a transformative journey. It's filled with practical tools and frameworks that I use every single day with my clients as part of their coaching program. If you want to take your business from good to great, check the link in the show notes or head over to monkhouseandcompany.com to grab your copy today. Now, back to the conversation. And when you say all hands, you mean the whole company?
Everyone.
Okay.
Everyone reports one question. So first round, these are the opportunities that I created this week.
Whole company's looking to the receptionist, to the developer, to the...
Yes.
Who are office junior. Did you create an opportunity this week? Okay, fabulous.
So now you have a developer saying, well, it's not my job to create opportunities. And you go, well, did you just see any? Week later, he comes back. Oh, I saw an opportunity, actually. They should use the product this way, but they're using it that way. So the opportunity that I am seeing is there is actually another bigger problem that they're trying to solve with our software. And now you have changed the culture of that company because now you have a culture of opportunity seeking. Everybody is watching for opportunities. So that's plan A. Because as you know, plan B is harder to implement. Getting now hiring from the outside and implanting stuff into the company is much harder. So first I try to leverage their current people. Let's sell from the product. Upsell, cross-sell, expansion selling. By making everybody sales aware, less sales afraid, more involved into the growth of the company. And sometimes that's enough. If it's not, then we look for product-driven sales instead of marketing and traditional sales. You can build in flywheels into the product, into how the users use the product and show other people that they're using the product. So I call those flywheels. It can be, for example, we come up with a mechanism that incentivizes users to make a screenshot on X whenever they experience a little breakthrough. For example, one of our clients is a software where you buy and sell stocks. So whenever there is a dividend payment, it tells them, congrats, you just got $27 from your Visa stock. They screenshot it and put it on X. So that's one little flywheel. From there, you can start brainstorming more frequent flywheels so that they will become the ambassadors. That's the second thing that I try to do. And then if none of that works, then we have to go to strategy number three, hiring from the outside and the traditional sales route.
Okay. And then what happens in the Friday deal meeting? How is that different from it was before?
Oh, very different. So the pipeline meeting ends with selecting two of those opportunities that were brought by your people. You select two and those get 20 minutes each in the deal review meeting. Now the deal review meeting, you go deep for 20 minutes. You look only at one opportunity. And now you do sales role plays. I am playing the buyer. I'm playing the seller. I am observing and taking notes and giving feedback. So it's an ABC role play, and that creates energy and confidence because it's always fun. Maybe it starts awkward, but it's always fun. Have you ever experienced the sales role play? It's always fun.
I suppose I don't end up talking to sales teams that are winning. I mostly end up talking to leaders and sales teams that aren't winning. And so you sort of say to, or I'm interviewing salespeople who then interview quite a few salespeople, you know, and you say, do you like role play? And the people just, they'd rather go to the dentists, you know, like that.
Really?
Well, yeah, because I interview people and I say, look, you know, what did you learn in the last month about sales?
Yeah.
And some people say, oh, well, I read this amazing book and it was brilliant. But most people go, learned? You know, like, oh, when was the last time you had sales training? Training? You know, and it's just that I think the reason that 85% of salespeople never hit a target ever, it's not like being a doctor, you know. I think it's a profession for mostly incurious people who are sort of muddling along and not very good. You know, if you were a doctor and you killed patients, or you're a coder and you wrote crap code, you'd get fired really quickly in sales. You can just be a bit shit. You know, you can be an account manager in a company and, like, you know, take a few orders and never actually develop sales capability, I think. The people who don't like role play, when you bring role play into an organization, I mean, they leave really quickly. I love role play.
Let me share some experiences from our most recent role plays. So I make some of those every Monday because I run a community called the 200K Club. It's for solopreneurs who want to add 200K to their sales pipeline. And so we come in, I share this yellow pyramid that's behind me for people listening to this. There's a yellow pyramid with 8 steps of closing the deal. Takes me 10 minutes to explain that. Very simple. And then we practice it. So we pick something that was in the pipeline, you didn't close it, and we just play it. What could you have done? And you know what happens? During that role play, people start dropping out because they say, Simon, I want to get out there and close deal. I'm hearing the sweet sound of chigging already. I don't want to be in a meeting now. I want to get out there and hunt big animals.
Oh, brilliant.
And I do the same thing every Tuesday with my own team. We are just 5 people on our sales team. It's a tiny team. And I am one of those. So it's 4 people and me. We do sales role plays all the time. It's not just to train the new people. Usually one of us is new because we have a high fluctuation in our sales team, like most sales teams have high fluctuation. And it's okay. It's good. There should be pressure. And it should be, you know, only the top people survive a sales team. I think it's an appropriate culture, performance culture. So it's not only to train the new guys, because we always have somebody who is new. It's also just a revitalizing of the old guys like me. It's vitalizing. It brings back the energy. Whenever you bring your attention to the chigging, you see those numbers, you see those 50,000, 60,000, 20,000 deals. You go, oh my God, stop simulation. Let's go. Let's get to the real stuff.
Under pressure, you default to the level of your training, I think is a phrase that something like the Navy SEALs use, right? And so, you know, you look at high-performing teams, football teams, right? They spend 5 days a week practicing free kicks, practicing stuff, you know, like in a football game. I was reading a great book called The Numbers Game. And in a football game, a player will be on the ball for less than 2 minutes in a game, right? And yet, one or two players touching the ball could make all the difference to the result. And so 2 minutes out of 90 minutes is all you've got. And if you don't practice, when the ball comes to your feet, what, you're going to make it? It's like, you know, you might have talent, but you have to decide what are you going to do with it? And so that, I think the role play thing is absolutely vital. When you're on a call under pressure with a client and they say something, what are you going to do back? What is it you say? What is it you do next? What do you do next? Because otherwise, I guess you, in this regard, you might be the same. I love selling. I love getting on a call with somebody. It's fantastic. And to me, it's a game, right? It's like, you know, come on, let's play, right? We've got, I'm going to say a thing. I'm expecting a response. If I don't get a response, actually, that's, oh, that was interesting. Well, what are we going to do next? And also, I think it's not just for the people. I find myself, I do some sales coaching with clients and I enjoy doing it because me training other people helps me get better at my craft. And so like running the role play, even not just being in the role play, I'm sure helps you get better at your craft.
Totally. So every Tuesday we do our own sales role plays. And then Tuesday evening, I have a one-on-one with my own sales coach. And now my team and my friends go, why do you need a sales coach? You are a sales guru, Simon. Why do you have a sales coach? What are you learning from this guy? And I say, I'm not learning anything new, but I am forced to get better at the foundations. And I think this is where I resonate a lot with your athletes example. Because, you know, when you're a top baseball player, you are not learning anything new from your coach. There is nothing that you need to learn anymore. You just need to practice the foundations, holding the ball, standing well. They don't have to learn how to stand on their feet. They know how to stand on their feet. But you practice standing the right way in every condition. You practice holding the ball the right way. You know how to hold the ball, come on. Yeah, but to get 1% better when you are at that level takes practice.
And it's even there's an amount of humility and curiosity knowing, you know, you just look at great sportsmen and, you know, they have multiple coaches. They have a nutrition coach and they have a strength coach and they have an endurance coach. And then they have skills coaches and they might have multiple skills coaches. And then somehow we say, oh, you're running a business which might be worth so much more money than a sports team. And yet your local village sports team has got more coaching than you have in your business. It's just funny the way somehow in business we just think, well, there are a lot of people who think coaching, why? You'd only have coaching if you weren't very good.
I have multiple coaches, multiple.
My first job out of university was working for Marks and Spencer's in retail. And I think about coaching as the way in which we asked you to position product. And so I think historically sort of coaching, training, maybe it was the same thing. You know, that's sort of it's a remediation. Whereas in retail, if you put your best line in your best space, it increases the sales volume by 20%. And so actually you should put all your training and development and coaching into your best people. And your coaches and trainers should be great at coaching and training. They shouldn't just be not very good at that, you know, they shouldn't be failed anything else. They should be great coaches and people who love development. But how many sales coaches did you say you had? Three?
I have three coaches in total. One is my sales coach. This is where people wonder, why do I have a sales coach? Yeah, to practice the basics, the fundamentals. And then I have a spiritual coach on how to grow as a person on a spiritual level, less ego and more serving the planet and serving the people around me. That's the work that I do to be a better husband, better CEO, better human being, better father. So that's my spiritual coach. And then I have a third coach that's more of a business coach, you know, how I can, because I'm scaling my company in form of a franchise, and I've never learned how to scale a franchise. So that person has done a ton of franchises and is an M&A lawyer and knows franchise stuff and helps me understand how to scale with franchises, the contracts and the risks and the things to take care of, because he has seen many franchises grow and many fail. So I have three coaches in total, one with the focus business, one with the focus sales, which is my own focus, and one with the focus spiritual growth.
Just winding back to something you said earlier, where you sort of said, look, and if that fails, then we'll do traditional sales and marketing. Do you have a traditional sales and marketing playbook where people, you think people get that wrong as well as as well as the sort of internal culture of sales?
I do have that. And it's actually pretty helpful for many traditional businesses. So we coach also, for example, many financial institutions, very large ones, very traditional ones. They're full of compliance rules, etc. They play the traditional sales game and marketing game. And for them, we just help them optimize that. And sometimes their B2B teams, they need just training. So this is also something that I'm learning now over the last years. Sometimes just good old school sales training, that's what people need. I always thought, oh no, that's too old school. Nobody needs that. But yeah, actually you need that. So if you don't have, as a team, if you don't have one common sales language and sales method, well, then you need one in the first place.
Yeah, you can't coach each other and discuss a deal if you don't have a vocabulary.
Exactly. But I was assuming they have a vocabulary, their own vocabulary, right? But it's a cohesive one. But when we enter those institutions, we see that every single department has their own vocabulary. So if you ask them, in which stage is this deal and what's the probability? They go, oh, it's 60%. Oh, 60% probability. What does it mean for you? What does it mean for you? And then you get two different definitions. So we go back to traditional and we say, okay, guys, first step, this week you install these stages and these stages get an automated percentage weighted probability. And this is the percentage.
It reminds me, years ago, I used to run a CRM consulting business where we would be doing Salesforce automation programs. And I used to start with the leader in sales and I'd say, okay, before we do any of the configuration, what report do you want to see? And give me the one report that you want to see and then we'll build a system, we'll generate that report. Because normally what happens is the data in the report isn't what they expected. And so therefore, if we built everything based on their assumptions, we'd have built it wrong. But one of the things they would say, I'd say, when you do the win-loss analysis, what do you think the reasons are that you might lose a deal? And not once did anyone give me the number one reason. And I'd say, you haven't given me the number one reason. And they go, what do you mean? I'd say, well, I was outsold by my competitor's salesperson. Well, because most of the time they say price, product, they say something else, but they never take accountability for it themselves. And without that accountability, actually, they're never going to get any better because they're just blaming everything else. So yeah, just that without that common vocabulary, common language, common understanding, you can't move forward and try and come up with a plan to get people better.
That's why I went back, heads down work, and I have created all those templates, 274 templates for my clients. One of them, people watching this on YouTube, they see it. It's the yellow pyramid behind me. It's 8 steps. And those exact 8 steps, that's what we train them. And you don't jump to step 3 before you've done step 2. And I see a ton of mistakes. For example, people sending an offer. That's why the offer is step 6. And you are not allowed to send an offer in my method. At any stage, you don't send an offer. You walk them through the offer. So you schedule a meeting and during the meeting, you walk them through it, but you are not allowed to send an offer because as soon as you send an offer, you lose the deal, you lose the win rate.
Yes. Well, what you've done is they've got a price. They can see the cost. In my experience, very often they haven't been able to conceptualize the value or the upside. So they're just going, something vague versus a price, not, they can't clearly see how you've lost the chance to anchor and position. Other than reading strategy sprints, which are available from all good booksellers, what else do you think people should pick up on their journey to growth?
Oh, there are some wonderful books. So I'm scaling via a franchise. So franchisees who want to use the strategy sprints method, they have to go through a 60 days training with me. And there are 5 books that they have to read. Only one is our own book. The other 4 are amazing books. Let me share some of those. They are really mandatory because they're so good. One of them is called The Power of Moments. two brothers who are amazing at writing. They are no practitioners. They are book writers. So they are thinkers, but sharp thinkers. They have analyzed, for example, if you go to Disneyland, what is it that you remember about that trip? And they have then back engineered what makes moments memorable. So what makes experiences stand out? They call it peak moments. And they really dissect how everyone can create peak moments. And every chapter is extremely valuable. I have it here on my desk. It's full of notes. And I want to implement all of that stuff into my own business. That's why it's still on my desk. It's a really good book about how to create extraordinary experiences. And, you know, every business owner should read this book and try to implement these things, because in the end, you want your buyer to have wonderful experiences. That's the whole game.
Dan and Chip Heath.
Yes.
Fabulous. Fabulous book. And it's interesting because it's that sort of built on the peak last theorem of Daniel Kahneman. Our minds aren't like a video library. They are, you only lay down a memory if it's connected to an emotion. Absolutely fabulous book. Yeah.
And you know, and this is also connected to the topic of sales, because you buy only things in an emotional way. Afterwards, you rationalize why you bought it, but it's always emotional first.
Totally. What else you got? That's brilliant. That's a good one.
Another book that's really, really good, let me check the exact title, is by the guy who scaled sales at HubSpot, Mark Roberge. It's called The Sales Acceleration Formula. It's a really, really good book. You get, and it's for enterprise people. So it's the story of HubSpot and how it scaled up and how they had to solve all their own sales issues. Like the marketing department was not aligned with the sales department. The sales department was hard to stay motivated. It's very practical, I think. It's everything that he describes. That's exactly what I experience in enterprises and in larger companies. So it's a really good book from a person who was actually in the field. It's not a cookbook in terms of you cannot just do whatever is in there, but it's grounded in the reality of actual sales teams and marketing teams. So it's a really, really good book.
In a few words, what drives you every day?
What drives me every day? That's a mystery, actually. I don't know. I am driven, but what do I know?
Okay. What's your genius?
Oh, my genius, my superpower is sales acceleration. That's what I can do if you wake me up 2 a.m. in the morning. After 90 days, their sales has doubled.
What unpopular opinion do you hold, and how has this impacted your success?
I think everybody should own property instead of fiat money. This has helped me become a smarter citizen.
Do you think salespeople are motivated by money? So should we pay sales commission or not?
Salespeople are not motivated by money. Should you pay sales commission? Yes.
Okay, well, if they're not motivated by money, why should we pay sales commission?
Yeah, it's still great to have people who are entrepreneurial. They are not motivated by money, they are motivated by winning. It's the chigging that we are here for. Chigging, chigging, and then we're happy. But should you pay commissions or just flat? Commissions, 100%. Why? Because you want the entrepreneurial out of all possible talents. You want the entrepreneurial ones because they will be more resilient over the long term.
What's the most significant risk you've taken in your career, and did it pay off?
I take risks every day, 4 or 5 times. I think they are calculated. My wife thinks not everyone is responsible. and so I learned by failure.
thinking about your eulogy, what people will be saying about you at your funeral, what do you want to be remembered for?
He was fun as hell.
What's the most recent thing you've learned or recent skill you've acquired?
I am learning yoga right now. I am learning about buyer psychology, everything that I can get in my hands about how behavior spreads in social systems. I'm learning about Web3 and AI. I'm an avid studier of what's happening in the world.
What's the worst business advice you've ever received?
Every business advice was terrible. I stopped listening to anything. I just do A/B testing now.
What do you think is the biggest myth in business?
Everything is just a myth before you validate it. Just do A/B tests.
How do you measure success? Not in business, but in life.
The number of laughter per hour.
Fantastic. Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. Some fantastic nuggets of gold in there for people.
Thank you, Dominic, for showing up with consistency for your community, day in and day out. And if people want to download some of our sales tools, they're open source. They can find them at strategysprints.com.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. If you'd be kind enough to leave a review, that will be really helpful to other like-minded entrepreneurs who might then find this podcast and we can grow our community. If you want to find out more about our guests, head over to monkhouseandcompany.com/podcast, where you'll find some cracking show notes and additional reading. Hope to see you back next week. Until then, mind your effing business.